We're rising.
Ignition sequence start.
We're rising. We're rising.
We're rising. We're rising.
It's gonna be a good day.
Wake up.
We're rising. We're rising.
3, 2, 1. Lift off.
It's the morning crew.
This is the morning crew.
The Joy FM.
All week long, I've been holding on to this story. I just wanted to ask if anybody was aware of the fact that the Popeye's chicken sandwich is back.
Oh, yeah.
CNN broke the story last Sunday. It was last Sunday evening, right. Almost a week ago.
National Sandwich Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't you talk about something with Popeye's the other day?
Not that the sandwich was back.
But there was some about Popeye's.
This is that sandwich that basically shut down the drive-thrus.
Yeah, yes, which was better. That's what it was.
Right.
The Chick-fil-A or the Popeye's. Yeah.
And then they sold it out.
Yeah,
and it's been gone for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Well, they finally restocked.
I see. Okay, got it.
And people have been losing their mind. This was the story. I thought it was kind of entertaining. Mm-hmm. The reason I've kept this story is I don't drive past Popeye's, and I definitely want to try one of these fried chicken sandwiches. Erica tweeted, live report from husband who is sitting in neighborhood Popeye's drive-thru, quote, it looks like Armageddon.
Really?
This one came from Boogie2988. Quote.
Oh.
Well, with a name like that.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to take their recommendation.
I'm quitting YouTube to resell Popeye's chicken sandwiches online, only $14 each. And then another one from Saheed. I hope everyone working at Popeye's gets a raise or a bonus because, whew.
Really? I don't even know where there's a Popeye's near me.
There is one about 5 miles from where we're sitting.
Okay.
Right now.
All right.
But it's a direction I typically don't drive unless I'm in a hurry.
It's south.
I should.
Today.
I should go over there and get me some.
Go over there and get you
some. Just go over and get you some.
No, yeah. But I'd like to see if there's like people at all of them like that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Are they waiting in line? Is it still a thing? Because that was Sunday when they restocked.
Right.
And can you bring me some red beans and rice when you go?
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. If anybody's had one of these and you love it, you can text us and let us know.
Bill was talking about the chicken sandwich at Popeye's being back over the weekend. They restocked it and relaunched it again on Sunday.
I still haven't had one.
I haven't either. It was National Sandwich Day. The follow-up story to that, I don't know if you saw this story.
Mm-hmm.
Chick-fil-A actually sent out a tweet encouraging people to buy a sandwich to celebrate National Sandwich Day.
Yeah.
Forgetting that National Sandwich Day was Sunday.
On a Sunday.
And they're closed. So they actually tweeted an apology follow-up and blamed it all on the cows, which were a little too enthusiastic about their own self-preservation. So that was the hand-in-hand story with the Popeye's chicken being back.
Wow. Well, people are tweeting us about this, or not tweeting us, texting us this morning. Julia texted, said, got one at my local Popeye's. Loved it.
Okay.
Here's another text. This one's not so complimentary.
Huh.
She says, meh, going to stick with Chick-fil-A.
There you go.
And then here's one. Dan C. from Atlanta says, amen, and whoops are bad. I don't know what that means. But anyway, we're good on the Popeye's chicken sandwiches. I just want to try one. That's all. I'm not changing loyalties or anything. You know, I just want to try one.
Sure.
Francesca Battistelli is one of our favorite songwriters and artists on our station, and we love Franny's mom. We love Franny, and we love her mom, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Franny was our summer cruise guest years and years ago, and if you're not familiar with summer cruise, it wasn't a boat cruise, but we would cruise around our listening area back when it was smaller in an RV, and we would do our show at diners and dives and coffee shops, and it was just so fun. We'd do our show live, and then we'd have a new artist, and Franny was Summer Cruise 4. She was not married then. She was engaged, giddy, had her head in that phone.
If
she wasn't singing, she was texting.
There was a lot of wedding prep going on.
Oh,
texting
fiancé. And she was just so,
hearts in her eyes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it was actually very, very cute. Kate, her mom, came with her, and we just became great friends with Kate. Kate has since then, she's written a couple of books. She and Mike, they used to live in Orlando, Franny's dad. They've moved to Nashville. And Kate's kind of like a Martha Stewart. She loves to be in the home. She loves to cook. And I am on her her mailing list from a lot of the books that she writes. And she sent this out the other day, and I think it's good. It's a little early, but we can start thinking this way. But she says, here's 8 tips for making holiday meal prep stress-free, less stressful.
Okay.
So I thought I'd go through these really quickly.
All right.
Want to?
Go for it.
Great way to end the week, because if you're out running errands this weekend, you might want to do some of these things.
By the way, we're wanting so bad to make a big pot of chili in the Martin home.
Yes, us too. Mm-hmm. Us too. We're same. Okay, this goes more for like Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Gotcha.
So number one, stock up on pantry essentials now before it gets crazy.
True.
So right about that. And look for holiday items and, you know, pantry foods. And it's true, man. When you hit the grocery store, when it's a frenzied time,
right,
I try to go through the week. So that's a great, great tip. Number two, purchase veggies. And this will be a little pricey, but it's worth it. Purchase veggies that are pre-washed and cut. I'm telling you, it is worth it.
Emily has done that.
Yes. It's totally worth the cost during this time of year.
Yep.
Just have that part ready to do. Number three, consider prepping, cooking, and freezing some of your recipes before the holidays. And you have to decide what can be frozen and what just needs to be
fresh.
Yeah. Can't really cook that Thanksgiving turkey and pop it in the freezer.
No, but my tip on that is call Four Rivers or call someone that smokes. That's my tip.
You can freeze stocks, though. Greens, if you're going to be doing any kind of greens, like if you like collard greens or mustard greens, those freeze very well.
Yeah.
Number four, she says use a slow cooker. And I incorporated this probably 5 years ago. The two things that I cook in the slow cooker now, my crock pot, is I do Paula Deen's mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I do Betty Crocker's sweet potatoes, mashed sweet potatoes. I put both of those in the slow cooker, and that just kind of clears off your stove. So if there's things that you can do in the slow cooker, put them there. Number five, she says, I don't have one yet, but look at getting an Instapot. It can be really fast.
Yeah.
Of course, you'd need the recipe to go with whatever. I don't know if I cook anything that would go in the Instapot. Quickly through the rest of these. Number six, buy in bulk whenever you can. Seven, your freezer is your friend, so fill up now, even the prep stuff, even if it's not the final thing that you're putting together. And then the last one, make lists. And I started this. I now have a Thanksgiving meal grocery list that I made 2 or 3 years ago, because every year I would write, because we do the same thing. Thanksgiving's one of those traditional meals where you cook the same, the menu doesn't change. It doesn't change in my house, at least, for Christmas either. So if you go into my documents on my laptop, I have a Thanksgiving grocery list and I have a Christmas grocery list.
Nice.
And you just have it. I just pull it up. I don't even have to think about it.
Yep.
So those are some tips that you can do now to make your holiday prep stress-free. We'll put this list at themorningcruise.com.
Don't forget to check themorningcruise.com to find the list of the stress-free holiday cooking tips, 8 of them, and they're all good.
Yeah, they are good.
You mentioned that you do in the slow cooker some smashed sweet potatoes.
Yes.
And you said it was a Betty Crocker recipe.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
I might want to get that from you, because that's something that I would love to incorporate. Like, everybody sort of inherits the traditional Thanksgiving meal from your family.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put your own twist on it. Like, I wonder what Adam and Leah, they're getting married Thanksgiving weekend, so their first Thanksgiving will be next year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they cook anything at their home, which we didn't for years, we just went to Kimberly's mom's house for Thanksgiving. But we always had, there was always a twist on the meal, even there, you know, something new.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like low ride out. I think mom's, what do you call the salad with the marshmallows in it?
Like a congealed salad.
Yeah. That one kind of started to try to go away. Mm-hmm. And I think we had, you know, special requests, like request hour, bring that back.
Bring it back.
But there are always a couple of things that you work in there. And something I want to get on our table is a really good mashed sweet potato.
I got it for you. And actually, I've talked about this before. Like, we've talked about Hope, my girlfriend Kelly, her daughter Hope, we're super close family friends. It was at Hope's house when we went over. I think it was for, I don't know, Christmas several years ago. And she had it sitting on the counter, and it was sweet potatoes. I'm like, Hope, what is this? And she goes, it's Betty Crocker. It's a Betty Crocker sweet potato recipe. I can totally get it for you. I incorporated that into my Thanksgiving, because we would make the sweet potato casserole.
Right. Yeah,
we've
the
always
tradition.
Had that.
Right.
But you end up having to bake that for 35, 40 minutes. Yep. So that's one more thing you're having to rotate through that oven. You just set that crock pot right there. And when I switched over to that, and then my niece Paulina, who lived with us for a little while, she's married now, has two babies, one on the way. She took over several years ago because I always made the Paula Deen macaroni and cheese. Well, now that's her thing to bring because we have Thanksgiving at my house. So Paulina takes care of that. The sweet potatoes have moved to the crock pot. My sister-in-law, Wendy, brings the turkey. So we just all, everybody pitches in, and it's a well-oiled machine.
We tend to do baked potatoes, but I would just as soon do this. The only problem is mom makes candied yams, and that's, I mean, that's,
It's in the same family.
It's similar.
It's not the same.
Yeah. It's not the same? No. We could do both?
You should try these. Try these. Ahead of time and just see if you like them. Like grill some chicken and then eat these sweet
Do you
potatoes.
Have a recipe you can put on our
That's
page?
What I'm telling you, yes.
Okay.
It's Betty Crocker's all day, every day.
I have to confess.
Yes.
I'm a doodler.
Yes, you are. But you're an accomplished doodler. You actually doodle things that are pretty artistic.
But still, I doodle, and I've doodled since school. I've doodled in college. I doodled while I was taking notes. Doodling helps me focus.
Doodling sounds funny
to me today. Can I just tell you where my brain goes?
We know where your brain goes.
Because that's what we called it when I used to babysit.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go doodle?
We never did.
We did. Okay, so go ahead.
So anyway.
Sorry, folks.
It's the truth. Anyway, doodling.
I bring it up as a doodler because... There is a 9-year-old in Shrewsbury, England, who is now known as the Doodle Boy. His name is Joe. He's 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He got in trouble in school for doodling. I can relate.
Yeah.
So instead of shutting it down, his parents decided to give him the creative space to share his art. They enrolled him in an after-school art class. His teacher recognized his talent. And now, he's not only been recognized by his teacher, but a local restaurant, Number 4 in Shrewsbury, England, asked Joe to doodle on their main dining room wall.
Whoa.
It took him 12 hours to finish the wall, but he did it. And now, not only has he finished the wall, he's got his own Instagram.
Oh, my goodness.
He's got his own website.
Don't you love it when things like this happen?
Yes.
I really do. When things go viral for
good
things.
Reasons.
Right.
You know, you can think something like this can be pushed down or can be redeemed. You know, when you've got a kid in class that's differently behaving sometimes, sometimes you have to ask why.
Why, yeah.
Right. And get behind it before you just mete out whatever you think the consequence should be.
On their website now, he's got his own website. You can see some videos of him actually doing this wall. I've got some of the artwork here. This looks a lot like some of the stuff James used to do, my oldest, when he was in school. Here's a little of it on the wall. You can see there he just fills up the wall. It looks like a graphic pattern on the wall from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all these little characters and cartoons that he's drawn. When James was...
He's left-handed, too. Did you notice this?
So when James was in high school, or when he was in high school... We actually let him doodle the wall in his bedroom.
I think that's great.
So he had a mural that he had created.
Yes.
And now this little 9-year-old has created an entire dining room mural for this restaurant. Mm-hmm. And who knows what's next?
He'll have a career as an artist now, for sure.
There have been people that have already framed bits of what he did on the wall.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be sold on the website. He may have a career in a year.
Oh, for sure, at 9 years old.
Yeah.
But that's one of the reasons, this is a little bit of a right-hand turn, but that's one of the reasons I love the whole chalkboard paint walls. And I've even looked at my house to see if I had a wall, which I don't have small kids anymore. But you'll see that Sam Ponder has it in her house. Yeah. You see it in a lot of houses where they get that chalkboard paint and they do a wall in the chalkboard paint. And that's where the kids can write and doodle on the wall.
It's kind of a controlled way of if you can't beat them, join them.
That's right. That's right.
Next week is our T-shirts for turkeys. We don't remember what annual it is, but for years we've gone out and collected frozen turkeys from our listeners, given them a specially designed Joy FM T-shirt, and worked with local food banks and food pantries and ministries so that those turkeys get distributed to needy families during the holidays. It's been a win-win-win situation. It's just been so good, and it really is making a difference in the community. So we're inviting you to check out on our website the location where we'll be near you. And we have more locations in three states
probably
than ever before.
Yeah, probably than we've ever had. If you log on to thejoyfm.com, click on your, you know, where you listen, and plan now, because it's going to come Monday morning. It's going to be fast and furious. You're going to be driving in. You're going to hear your city, and you're going to have missed it. So these T-shirts, they go fast.
Yep.
It is one of our most beloved outreaches. These ministries, they depend on us every year to help supply the needs for all the meals that they're giving to folks. So we need you. We need you. Frozen turkeys, paper turkeys are $10. We're just fanned out all over our listening area in Alabama, Georgia, Florida. So
yeah. And the thing of it is, it's in the morning and it's in the afternoon. There's specific hours involved. So you can't just show up. So go find out. It's at thejoyfm.com. Click on T-shirts for turkeys. If we pick a list of names here, Louis Giglio, Mark Hall. I would put Matt Maher in this category. Mm-hmm. These are guys, when we have them on the show in front of a microphone, there's probably a couple girls, too. I think Beth Moore would fit this category.
Oh,
but we, 100%. We've never had her on the show.
Right.
Yeah.
Dave has, but we haven't. So they are truth bomb deliverers.
Yeah.
Like, they just take us places that cause us to really see a bigger picture of who God is and a clearer picture of who we are. So Mike Donaghy is kind of in that category now. Mike's the lead singer of 10th Avenue North. He just wrote a book called Finding God's Life for My Will. And we intended to talk to him just about that book. But we sat down with him and had such a great conversation. We wanted you to be part of it. So this is part two,
right?
The second day of some fantastic conversation with Mike Donaghy.
It got deep and it got silly.
We're talking to Mike Donaghy this morning. And Mike, you talked in a podcast that I listened to recently about leaders and how we're actually servants, but then our egos can't handle it. So we call ourselves servant leaders. And I just really loved how you spoke into that. But then also when you told that story, you did a couple of impersonations, a Shrek impersonation that 1,000% you have to share with us.
My daughters asked me to do a Shrek and donkey banter about every day.
Okay. I am asking on behalf of the Joy FM listening family. I cracked up. I backed it up, Mike, probably three times. You nailed it. I didn't realize that you were a theater major.
I was a theater major. What do you think, Lord Farquaad? You think you'd have anyone coming here from the Forbidden Forest? Fiona, don't you see? I've got to get my swamp. Listen, Shrek, I know you want your swamp, but listen, I'm coming over in the morning. I'm making waffles.
That's pretty dead on. It really is.
We've got to get you to say you're listening to the Morning Cruise as the donkey.
I'll do it.
Okay, go for it.
Hey, this is Donkey, and you're listening to the Morning Cruise.
One of the things that we talked about was, or we hinted towards, I should say, just a few minutes ago, was that he covers the idea of servant leadership in the book. And then we took that right to where you would expect it to go, Shrek and Donkey. And then we thought we should probably get back to leadership.
Since you are a leader and a public figure,
you are,
Mike,
a leader, even though you don't view yourself as that.
My point is this. How you view yourself is infinitely more important than how the public perceives you. And I would argue that any follower of Christ who views themselves as a leader is setting themselves up for failure. And I say that because Jesus didn't ask anyone to lead. You can look for it yourself. There's not an instance. But he did say, follow me, follow me, follow me. Then you got Paul, who he says, hey, follow me as what? As I follow Christ. So he viewed himself as a follower. So much so that there's a bunch of hubbub about who follows Paul, who follows Apollos. And in 1 Corinthians 3 and 4, he says twice, he says, don't call us leaders. Call us servants. But we can't handle that. We're like, oh, I see you, Paul. Fist bump, wink, servant leader. Yeah, because the best leaders are servants. And that's what drives me crazy. We have all this leadership stuff, and we're like, okay, you want to be a leader, i.e., do you want to be a big deal? You want people to treat you like you're better than them? Do you want a bunch of power and influence? That sounds like greed. Okay, this is how you do it. Go serve people so that you can go get those idols you're after. why say, if you want to be a leader, go be a servant so you can be a leader? Why not just say, hey, if you want to be a leader, stop. Just stop. If you're in this to get people to see you and know you and think you're awesome, think you're a big deal, you're not going to get joy that way. The way of joy is not by gaining more power. Jesus showed us the way to joy is by disavowing your power. And so I go, why don't we have any followership conferences or servanthood conferences? Well, it's because servanthood and followership, it doesn't appeal to our ego. But leader does. So we try to hijack a wrong motivation and try to, like, make it be a servant. And it just doesn't work that way.
Mike, when your book first came out, I said to the team here, guys, I want to make sure we get Mike Donaghy on as soon as we can to talk about this book because I know he's going to have good things to say. Between Hitch and Carmen, it got done quick. So I had like a day, and I'm not going to talk to an author of a book on the show without reading the book. So within 24 hours, I read the entire book. I reviewed it on Goodreads.
Thank you. I ordered
a copy for my son who lives in Nashville. I ordered another Audible copy for his girlfriend.
And let's be honest, you stole my copy.
I stole Carmen's copy out of her office, and I made notes for this for this interview. I do expect VIP seats at the next show.
There should be at our show now if you like submit a book review.
Yes!
Like if you bring in a written review, you get like preferential seating.
Right,
like a good servant leader.
Right. But I've got three quotes from the book, and I wanted you to just comment on them as succinctly as you can, but they're big ideas, so we'll see how that goes. Bonus points if you can give me the chapter.
Oh, wow.
Here's something that really caught my eye. If Jesus came today, he would be helping you assemble your IKEA furniture.
Oh, is that from the Ministry of Interruption?
Chapter 10.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, he would totally.
So what do you mean by that?
I think what I'm talking about there is how God gives us ministry opportunities, but they don't usually look like what we think. We think American Idol. It's going to be this huge moment with fireworks and everyone's going to be looking. But the moments that God gives us every day look like a friend needing a ride to the airport or someone going, hey, can you come over and help me assemble my IKEA furniture? And I think what really makes Jesus coming to earth so powerful is that he comes and he just lives among us for 30 years before he has this like really powerful ministry. So that tells me there's something in embracing what feels like inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
And go, those are actually the moments that your life is made. And I used IKEA furniture just because Jesus was a carpenter, so I thought that was clever.
Makes sense.
And because nobody knows how to assemble it.
Mike, right. If the band thing ever doesn't work out for you or the author thing doesn't work out for you, will you just come please be a fourth member of the Morning Cruise?
I'm in.
One of the things you did in your book, Mike, is to make a distinction between working for rest and working from rest.
Yeah. You know, Rebecca Lyons just wrote a book called Rhythms of Renewal. I was just at a conference with her and realized she's got a lot to say in this. But we basically buy into this capitalist society, like work for 50 weeks and have vacation for two. Kill yourself so that you can just unplug completely. And with the Sabbath being a weekly rhythm and God himself resting, ironically, I was on a vacation when I heard this from God. And it was at the beginning of a year. I was like, you know, what's my New Year's resolution? What do I want to do differently this year? I was thinking of the same sort of like, okay, I'm going to accomplish this and I'm going to accomplish this and I'm going to accomplish this. And then maybe I'll get like even an extra week of vacation with my wife and kids. And I felt like God just whispered to me. He goes, Mike, work from rest, not for rest. What if the Sabbath is meant to be a part of how our lives as Christians look? Meaning, we do our jobs because we love them and we feel called to them, not because we're trying to climb up the ladder to be more powerful and successful than everyone else.
Mm.
Like you can feel it. You feel it, right? Mm-hmm. The difference when someone is truly like working from a place of rest because they go, I've got it. I've got it. And I know like someone listening goes, that's just the thing though. How in the world do I ever figure out what my calling is? And there's a really great Frederick Buechner quote. He says, your calling is where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Mark Twain said it a little more bluntly. He said, Success is when your vacation becomes your vocation. But I would say that's only half the story. Buechner says it's not enough to just do where your deep gladness is. Because if you do, you'll get fidgety, you'll get restless, you'll get just self-centered and narcissistic, right? If it's all about you, what makes me come alive? And there's been books written about that. But on the other hand, if you just ask, and a lot of people in the church, they go wrong, they just ask, well, what does the world need? Well, someone's got to do that, so I guess I'll go do that. And they kind of play the martyr, and they go, well, I got to go do it because nobody else will. And they end up burning out because they're giving themselves to something they're not really wired to do. But the magic is when you say, what makes me super unique? What are the things that only I laugh at in the movie theater? You know, when there's a comedy in the movie theater and you're the only person who laughs out loud at a joke. And that tells me that's because you're wired uniquely. God knit you together uniquely. Okay, so ask yourself, what makes me come alive? Now, don't stop there. Ask the next question. And how can I do that in a way that actually blesses people? That's the magic.
That's really good.
Good gravy. Mm-hmm. I want to package just this one last conversation and have every single young person who's trying to figure it out, older people too, but I just happen to have a recent college graduate in my house right now, and just say this, this,
this. What I would say to college grads is you're paralyzed waiting for permission instead of feeling empowered by his presence. That's not in the book. That's just what I'm summing it up with.
That's a free epilogue.
That's amazing to a college student to go, you don't need God's permission. Like he told the Israelites to go into the Jordan before it parted. And so, but you do need to ask, like, how can I do what I'm going after in a way that actually blesses and helps the world? Because otherwise it would be deeply dissatisfying.
Mike Donahue's book is called Finding God's Life for My Will. And this is on page 29, Mike. I highlighted this. Sometimes the moments of greatest tragedy are the exact moments when something beautiful is being born. And sometimes the only thing keeping us from God's dreams for our lives is our unwillingness to let go of how we thought our own dreams should go.
This is my story. I wanted to be a famous athlete, wanted to be a famous actor, and God had the audacity to not let those things happen. And it isn't until I get older that I realize God, like we always talk about, well, God doesn't answer prayer, right? It's yes, no, or maybe. I would actually say his promises are always yes and amen. The problem is we don't realize what we're asking for. For instance, if when I prayed, God, make me famous, what I actually was praying was, God, I want to be known and loved and have a life of meaning. And so God, in order to actually answer my prayer, he had to not answer my prayer. He's like, if I make you famous, you know how difficult it's going to be for you to actually be known and loved? So I'm not going to let you be famous in the way you thought, because it's actually going to be a hindrance to what you actually want. Or, you know, I have guys who go, my company is going to be the biggest company on the East Coast. And God hears that prayer, and what I say in the book is he follows desires deeper down than we do. He goes, oh, man, that prayer is just full of lust for greed and power. I can't give that to you that way, but I can shape you and teach you to treat your employees differently. I can treat you how to create an atmosphere in your workspace where people don't just use each other, but they actually honor each other. And because of that, your business won't be able to get as big as you want it to, but your business will have this culture that will feel like heaven on earth when people walk in there. And so I would actually say to people, the problem isn't that God isn't answering your prayers. The problem is you're not listening to your own prayers deep enough.
For the last couple of days, we've been talking with Mike Donahue, lead singer of 10th Avenue North, and now an author with a book to his credit entitled, what's the name of the book?
Finding God's Life for My Will. It's a tricky one, but it's so Mike Donahue. Mm-hmm.
Right. So one more thing with Mike before he leaves.
Yeah. The thing that I love about you is there's just this calm, peaceful confidence about you.
Well, I think it's because I've just let God annoy me. And what I mean is we get all out of whack when we forget how annoyingly patient God has been with us. And so I'll leave you with this thought.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most annoying parables that I just don't hear evangelicals quote ever is the one where there's a farmer and he's got a field full of wheat. And overnight, the enemy comes and he plants weeds amongst the wheat. And in the morning, the workers say, they see all this weeds. And they rightly say to the farmer, let's go pull all the weeds out. This, look how terrible the field looks now. It's full of weeds. And that's how so many of us think that we're supposed to operate in the church. I'm supposed to go around and pull all the weeds out.
Mm.
And what does the farmer say? He says, don't go pulling out the weeds. You go pull out the weeds, you're going to pull out all the wheat.
Mm.
He says, it'll get harvested eventually, and then we can separate it.
Mm.
But right now, your job is not to pull out the weed and decipher what's wheat. Your job is not to decide who's in and who's out. Mm. Your job is to treat everyone like they're in until they actually believe it for themselves.
That's awesome. That's so good. What a word. Do you just love Mike Donaghy or what?
Yes.
He is the best. I put him on a short list with Louis Giglio, Mark Hall. Just, oh, such wisdom. Such wisdom. They really stretch you. We've got some of these books to give away. I am going to download the Audible version of this book, and I'm gonna start listening to it this weekend because I want to read it now. But we have five copies, and it's called Finding God's Life for My Will. And let's just take the first five callers. You want to do that right now?
Yeah, my son, by the way, is reading this book right now. My son, who lives in Nashville.
Yeah.
And he talked to me the other night. He'd read the first three chapters, and he says, this is really, really good. It really was helping him to gain some new perspective on the circumstances that he's in.
Yeah.
When you can be in circumstances that don't change, and you get a new perspective, that's good
work.
That's growth.
That's growth. Yeah. Sure is. That's the Lord.
Got something for you. I started to say a challenge, but Carmen doesn't like it. Whenever I say challenge, assignment
is one thing. You gave us an assignment.
Assignment. Who likes the word assignment?
That wasn't fun.
Well, Carmen might like this. Dave, you'll love it.
Okay.
This is from Twyla France in the latest edition of Relevant Magazine, and it's all about Aeneid neighboring. Yes, Enneagram-based neighboring. Enneagram-based neighboring.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. So here's where Twyla's going. She began to realize that one of the reasons that we have a hard time building relationships with our neighbors is that they're just so weird. They're just different than we are, right? Like, we're perfect and they're weird. That's the way we think.
Right.
Only problem with that is they look at us and think, they're weird.
Yeah.
And this is just human personality.
Yeah.
And the Enneagram.
The thing about it is we love our neighbors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've been super close to our neighbors all these years.
You've been in the same neighborhood for a number of years.
Yeah. It's not that way for everyone.
Right.
But man, we have been so blessed with Joe and Nancy.
So Twyla says, look up and down your street for a moment. What jumps out at you? Can you pick out the garage door with peeling paint, the walls through which the loud music often pound, or the direction from which a car alarm intermittently rakes across the silence of the night? The dog that makes a break for the door on the regular basis or leaves behind a gift by your mailbox. It's easy to draw conclusions about our neighbors based on the little slivers of their lives that are visible to us and then let those perceived differences drive us apart. However, when we assess our neighbors but only possess a minuscule sliver of the whole of who they are, we fall into assumption drawing and reduce valued, multifaceted people to one-dimensional cursory depictions. Like, that writing is kind of interesting. But basically, the idea here is we size people up based on just surface stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not true. And what she is saying is that this Enneagram, which tries to appreciate people's personality differences, actually has been a helpful tool for her building empathy with her neighbors to try to kind of see what kind of person this is. Are they motivated by, I'm a seven, I want to throw a party and I want enthusiasm? Are they motivated by, I'm a one, I want everything to be
in order
and just perfect? Are they a
helper,
six,
two,
a little suspicious? And so she begins to use this typology to get to know her neighbors at below a surface level. What do y'all think of that?
Well, I'll tell you. Did she have them all take the test?
Mm-mm.
So then she's profiling.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you're not supposed to do,
correct?
Right? which yep. is what I keep saying about all you Enneagram cult members,
right.
is that you say,
goodness.
We're not really supposed to do that, but
Dave,
that is such a
where
blank
are you
thing.
This weekend? Won't you tell us where you are this weekend, Mr. Anti-Enneagram?
I will be in heck.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm going to tell you where he's going to be. I love the Enneagram. Do I think it's the gospel? Absolutely not. But do I think that it's helped me in a lot of my interpersonal relationships? Because I am one. I can size people up and I can say, oh, you just need to bend to how I am. But when you, and the whole thing is empathy. When you see what
drives and motivates.
Drives and motivates other people, you do see them in a different light. And you, the Enneagram was a 2x4 over my head to finally get the fact that, you know what, Carmen? There are just people different than you, and there are people who think differently than you, and that doesn't make them wrong, and you're always right. Like, mm-hmm. God used the Enneagram to get that through my head. So here's what's hilarious. There's a guy named Ian Crone who wrote a book that I love, and there's a CMB, Christian Music Broadcasters, thing happening this weekend. I really thought about going because Ian is the speaker.
Right.
Dave is as anti-Enneagram as you can get. And guess who's going to the CMB thing this weekend? And guess who's staying home watching Alabama LSU? He said yes. This is what's so funny. I sat in this studio and said, I think I may go to the CMB retreat because it's Ian Crone. I said that in the studio.
I know.
And Dave said yes before he knew who the speaker
was. I didn't realize.
I believe this is the Lord getting Dave's attention to say, you know what, maybe there's something to this and I need to stop being so snarky about it.
I'm this way about all personality tests because I don't like being boiled down to a set of statistics.
But it's not that.
We'll talk about it again on Monday.
You know, perhaps the reason the Lord has had me go is to set all these people straight.
Well, let us know how that goes.
Oh, my goodness. I want to see you do that. Here's why the Lord's having you go. LSU's going to win this year because you're not going to be home watching. You've been home every year.
Or perhaps he's distracting me so that I won't see them lose.
You've been home every year, and LSU has lost.
Apparently.
And now you're going to be in Nashville.
Yeah.
And you're changing the mojo, and I'm kind of mad about it.
So
I believe in mojo about like I do the Enneagram. That's the problem.
True.
Carmen mentioned a few minutes ago that I'll be attending a retreat this weekend.
Uh-huh. About the Enneagram.
I know. Yeah. It's not
an radio industry retreat, but it includes the Enneagram thing.
And here's why I agreed to go.
Mm-hmm.
On the back end of this retreat is another thing called CMBU, where college kids that are interested in radio are coming in, and they asked if I would lead one of the breakout sessions, be a part of a panel, and mentor a group of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so cool. I'm so glad you're doing that, Dave.
Nobody better than
you to do this.
And so I said yes. And then I found out the first half of the weekend was Enneagram. So, but I've done something else for the first time that on this trip. And I'm wondering if either of you have done this.
Mm, what?
I checked in using an app. I checked into the hotel.
Oh yeah, I've done that.
Using an app. Have you done this, Bill?
Mm-hmm. Not quite. We haven't.
Yes, I have.
How did it go for you?
Marriott, fine.
I'm hoping that it goes fine.
Yeah.
They offer you the opportunity to bypass the front desk altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had that when we went on our cruise in the hotel in Miami.
Okay.
And we almost checked in. I don't remember what happened, but we saw it.
Right.
So we know it's there. Then I tried to use the app to get into the room, too, because you can use your app as a room key.
Right, exactly.
It didn't go so well with me. So
here's the deal. I checked in using the app, downloaded the app, checked in. I'm checked in. Here's what I don't know. What's my room number? How am I supposed to find that out? And how do I use my app as a key?
Mm-hmm.
So in the effort to bypass the front desk, I'm only halfway there.
They didn't tell you in the app. See, that's where I got mine.
Not yet, at least.
I don't know.
Maybe
it tells me that
I've
checked in, but nothing says room number yet.
I bet they haven't assigned you a room number yet.
Yeah, or it could be where you still have to go to the front desk. Or does it say bypass the front
desk? It says you can. That's one of the things that it promises. And that's why I'm asking, because it's not telling me how to do that at this point.
I'll be eager to see. Yeah. I'd go to the front desk and say, hey, I'm checked in. What do I do from here?
What now?
Yeah.
So I go to the front desk and ask them how I avoid going to the front desk.
That's the idea.
Got it. Well,
it's in beta.
Okay, this is it for this week. So, Dave, tell your sister that you love her. I love you, my brother.
What am I witnessing right now?
We have to be nice to each other right now.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because Saturday's happening. Right.
I thought, it's not May. Dave doesn't have to say this until May.
No, he doesn't do that. That went away a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Forget that.
Man. Yeah.
There are certain friends that on this particular weekend, I just have to send a text and tell them that we can be friends again on Monday.
Me, Grant, Kenny.
Those are the ones,
They're my fellow Roll Tide fans. But I tell you, I've said it all season long. I think this is LSU's year.
I'm not as convinced. And I was looking at stats comparisons between the two teams.
Yeah.
Man, it's going to be this week.
It's going to be tough. All I can think about is Tua's ankles. Like, that's all I've been thinking about is Tua's ankles and just...
Okay, before we go deeper into Tua's ankles, for those not acquainted, Carmen,
Tua,
Alabama.
I'm Alabama. Dave's LSU.
They play tomorrow. It's a big, big, big rivalry.
Huge game.
We lost one of our linebackers.
They're basically calling it the national championship. It's 1-2.
Well, they're ranked 1-2, right?
Yeah. Depending on who's, I think Alabama's three.
Well, in the power rankings that just came out, we're number two and Alabama's number three and Ohio State's number one.
Yeah, I did say that. I did see that. I did see that.
The coaches poll has Alabama number one. The AP poll has LSU number one.
I don't like that. I mean, I like that. I don't want to be number one.
I have the same issues for the same reason.
I will tell you this, though. It's so funny because our listeners will send texts and DMs. And they're like, how are you and Dave doing? And we really are fine. I think we're more just nervous for our team.
Yeah.
But here's how it will go. We'll go Monday morning. Well, actually, we'll text each other Saturday night and say congrats. But this is how it will go. Next Monday, we'll see each other. And I will say, congratulations. Don't want to talk about it, but y'all were amazing.
I hope that's what the way it goes.
Or what will you say to me? Pretty much the same thing as possible. Yes, exactly. You'll do the same. You'll go, but we've worked together for a long time. We've survived all these
games. That's right. Over a decade's worth of these conflicts.
I know.
Have come and gone.
Yeah.
And nobody's been cut.
And we're still standing. That's yes. Right. Yes, yes, yes. So Roll Tide.
Go Tigers. Bill's big
word of the day. Reconciliation is the big word of the day today. It's a noun. The verb is reconcile. It means the act or process of settling a quarrel or dispute and bringing into harmony or agreement, or more simply, to restore a relationship. It comes from Middle English back in the 1300s from the words that came out of ecclesiastical councils, a word that means to make good again. Specifically, it's a biblical word. So here's your sentence. Whether Alabama or LSU wins tomorrow, remember, reconciliation is possible and needed in the family of Christ. Just remember that. That's your big word of the day today, reconciliation. This is the Morning Cruise.